Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Hello, everyone, everywhere. This is Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast for today. We are so blessed that you're joining us. Our guest today is Alan Gottlieb, the founder of the Second Amendment Foundation. Actually, this is part two of our two-part interview with Alan. And if you missed yesterday's episode, you need to go back and catch up, because we do not have time to go back and replay everything that we talked about yesterday. But it is so important, as he is talking about your constitutional right to keep and bear arms. And today we're going to be talking about how the leftist socialist government, the leftist socialist ideology is trying to pervade our government, erode your constitutional rights. They want to take your weapons. Why is that? Look at history. There is not one socialist country, not one communist country that has the freedoms that we have today. And the number one reason is because this nation has the right to keep its government in check by having the people armed. Venezuela is the latest example. They took away all the weapons from the people, and look where they're at today. You know, it is so important for us to maintain that constitutional right, and the Supreme Court has upheld that right, but the leftist socialists are trying to take away those rights, erode them a little at a time, and Alan Gottlieb and his foundation, the Second Amendment Foundation, is standing there and protecting your rights. Now, today, we're going to jump right back into this interview. We're going to conclude our interview with Alan Gottlieb, and I pray that you'll support their organization. Here we go. Amen. What are some of the major news events concerning the attempts to revoke Second Amendment rights, or at least drastically alter the Second Amendment? What's going on in the news with that right now?
Well, what's really driving the news in that category, again, are the 22 plus or whatever the number is today of the Democrats running for president, each one trying to, you know, out anti-gun the next one.
Right.
So the proposals are from everything from banning all firearms to banning just semi-automatic firearms, to banning the kinds of ammunition, to banning, you know, magazines that might hold more than 10 rounds. New York tried to ban magazines that hold more than 7 rounds. That got thrown out in court. But it just keeps demonizing, and roadblocks being put in place, making it more difficult to be able to obtain a firearm. Longer waiting periods, higher fees, anything they can do to put a roadblock in place to make it more difficult to either get a firearm or to use it is what we're seeing happening right now.
Yeah, amen. You know, I hear so many politicians talking about, I will not abolish the Second Amendment, but we will enact changes to bring it more in line with modern life. What the heck does that mean?
That means basically they don't believe in the Constitution and they'd like to rewrite it. That's about what it amounts to. That's a way of saying, you know, I'm for the Second Amendment, but.
Yeah.
That's sort of what they're saying. Once that word but comes in there, that means they don't respect the Constitution at all.
Yeah, I understand that the Constitution is a living document and that it was designed that way. But at the same time, I'm a constitutionalist, I guess you could say, at heart, that we have to go back to what the Founding Fathers wanted in place. You know, what was the foundation upon the whole thing? And so many politicians today just trying to get votes, they think, you know, by changing the Constitution, they win votes that way. I mean, how is your organization going about to try and make people aware of that?
Well, first of all, we have our opponents like to change the language too. You know, it's no longer gun control or gun confiscation. They like to call it, you know, gun safety or common sense gun control.
Yeah.
And common sense doesn't necessarily mean to one person what it means to another person. So we're looking at them trying to change the language around it. They don't want to talk about gun control or gun confiscation because they know that's a non-starter. So they want to pretend it's something else. And then, of course, when they come up, you know, like you have a horrible incident of a shooting, mm-hmm. and they come out with all kinds of proposals, none of those proposals ever address the real question of why that shooting took place or what would have stopped it. So, like example, we just had the horrible tragedy in Virginia,
yeah.
and you you've got politicians coming out, oh, we need to ban assault weapons, except an assault weapon wasn't used. It was a handgun that was used. So they never have a way of really addressing the problem in a way that's really going to fix it. It just demonizes guns and gun owners any chance they come away with.
Yeah, and you know they fight against the idea of, well, let's allow teachers to carry guns, you know, in on themselves, concealed weapons in school. Oh, we can't have that. But yet it's been proven that someone with a gun is more capable of, as who's been trained, is more capable of stopping a threat as it materializes than waiting the 3 to 5 minutes for the police to arrive and then make entry and try and isolate the gunman and do all that. You know, that 5 minutes, a lot of people can get shot in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the schools there, because again, schools are so-called gun-free zones where it's not legal to have a firearm there to begin with.
Yeah.
If you look at all these recent, you know, mass shootings, you know, be it on city property in the city hall where you're not supposed to have a firearm, or in a mall, a shopping mall, or a movie theater where it says, you know, gun-free zone is post sign is posted, you know, or the schools, they all seem to happen in places where the perpetrator knows no one is there to be able to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. These are really victim disarmament zones. And they don't work. And I think now we should figure that out.
Yeah, amen. I remember growing up in school. I mean, you know, like I said, we come from a hunting community, and it was not unusual for, you know, the guys to have shotguns hanging in the window of their truck, windows down, out in the parking lot, you know, because you didn't want the cut truck to get overheated. And then right after school, they go hunting, you know. So, I mean, these guns were hanging right there, loaded. And I can't recall one instance of anybody ever having a shooting at school when I was growing up. I mean, you know, what's changed in society?
Well, a lot of things have changed in society. There's a very disrespect for human life to start with. You know, and, the, you know, we have a significant problem with mental health issues in this country and how we deal with that. There's a whole lot of reasons why we have crime and violence, you know, poverty, a lot of social economic reasons. No one wants to address the root reasons, because those cost money to solve those problems, and they're complicated. So if you just say, let's just ban guns, that sounds simple, and you know it doesn't really solve the problem, but that's what the politicians go for.
Yeah, amen. And, you know, I mean, the historical fact is that, you know, tens of millions of citizens own guns, and you know, they realize that if another nation wanted to invade this country, they realize it's not just the military they're going to have to fight. And, you know, it's going to be the citizens that have probably more weapons than the military does. And, you know, if other nations can understand this, we should also realize that these politicians who want to grab more and more power understand it as well, right?
Well, there's, you know, current examples. Take a look at Venezuela, where they've, you know, banned the ship of firearms, and nobody has a chance to rebel against, you know, a government that's shredding all their rights and their economic freedoms. And it's a problem. You take a look through history, you mean, what's the first thing that a dictator does, be it on the left or on the right, the first thing they do is confiscate people's ability to defend themselves.
Yeah.
You know, against tyranny. So, I mean, the history is there. I mean, it seems like it keeps repeating itself.
Yeah, it does. Amen. And if Congress, if Congress should pass laws that, you know, to come right out and have a politician come out and say, you know, we're striking the Second Amendment from the Constitution, they'd never win an election. But if Congress just, you know, chips away at it a little bit of time, all in the name of fighting crime, eventually they'll succeed in getting this to the point that the Second Amendment is meaningless. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, it becomes meaningless when you pass all these different regulations, and you know, it's gotten out of hand. We have in this country over 22,000 laws that affect the private ownership, use, and possession of firearms.
Wow.
I mean, that's phenomenal. All those laws don't seem to, you know, stop criminals. Again, because you mentioned in your opening monologue that basically, you know, criminals don't obey laws, and so therefore, you know, they're not going to pay attention to a gun control law is basically sort of what you're, you know, insinuating, and you were right.
Yeah, amen. And I was just, before we got on, I was looking at a new law that was down and being enacted down in Arkansas. You know, Arkansas is a state where you can conceal or open carry. It's part of their constitution. So what the lawmakers have enacted is, if you want to have a concealed weapons permit, since it's not required to do so, you can apply to have one. And if you're applying, then you're going to enter into a contract with the state that says, you know, it's got all these background questions that you normally would answer. And down at the bottom it says, and if anything changes on this application, you are required and agree to notify the state of the change. Not waiting until your renewal period, you're getting ready to renew it again. Which means if, today you're fine, let's say you're military and, you've been dealing with PTSD and all that, and so you decide, I'm going to go to the doctor, and he refers you, 6 months from now to a counselor, who then now you have a record, seeing a counselor about your PTSD. If you don't notify the state, you are in violation of that contract, and then it says, and subject to criminal prosecution. Something simple like that, just one little line in this contract can just entirely ruin your life. And there's several people that I'm aware of that they're not renewing their concealed carry permits because they don't want to be subject to, having to notify the state of every little thing that goes on. But that's what I'm talking about, these little tiny laws that, this just go ahead and do it. But it whittles away, just chips away at your constitutional rights. And how can we put a stop to that type of thing?
Well, it's hard to put a stop to it when you have, politicians don't respect your rights. But elections have consequences. And like Ronald Reagan used to always say, your freedom is really only one election away from extinction.
Yeah.
So elections are very, 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 very important. And gun owners and people who care about constitutional rights need to be engaged.
Mm. And, I understand fighting crime. I mean, fighting crime is right up there with kissing babies in the political arena. I mean, but their argument is, who would not want to see less crime? They keep pointing, as you said, to the number of shootings, and then they make the correlation that shootings equals guns, so less guns equals less shootings. But yet, it's actually the opposite of that, because I remember down in Texas, when we lived down in Texas, their crime rate in Dallas, I mean, I live in Baltimore, Maryland right now, right? And it's like Murder City, USA. I mean, we compete every year with Chicago about who's going to have the greatest number of killings. And these liberal states have such controls, as we said in the beginning, that some people can't even qualify for a concealed weapons permit. But when you go down in Baltimore, I'd venture to say a good third of the population is carrying illegally down there, and which is where all the shootings are. But in Texas, Dallas, Texas, and Fort Worth, they fired the police chief in Fort Worth, Texas, because he had 27 murders or something like that. And they're like, oh, it's spiking! They do that in a month here, But that's what I'm saying. But down in Texas, you don't know who's got the gun on them. So therefore, everyone is a little bit more respectful of your rights down there. And that, I just don't understand the thinking behind the efforts to abolish the power of the Second Amendment. How is your organization getting that notice out to this nation that we need to fight to keep this going?
Well, before I answer that question, I just want to jump into what you said there, because you brought something in my mind. The anti-gunners are very good about every time that somebody uses a gun in a crime, about talking about how evil guns are and how we need to get them off the street, so to speak. But they never, ever, ever want to talk about it when somebody uses a gun to save lives.
That's true.
And and to be honest about it, to get the right answer to a public policy question, you got to look at both sides of the equation. You can't get a right answer if you don't look at one side of the equation. And the other side totally refuses to acknowledge that over 800,000 times a year, somebody in America uses a firearm to protect themselves and their family and property from criminal attack. And in 99% of the cases, the gun's never even fired. The mere presence of the gun means the rapist flees as quickly as he attacked, or the person that broke into your home runs as quickly away as possible, and you're saved and your property is saved. They don't ever want to talk about that at all. Yeah. And that significantly lowers our crime rate when people have a way to deter crime. They never want to talk about that. We like to get these kind of messages out in answer to your question. We use direct mail very heavily. We use the internet very heavily, email, and Twitter and Facebook, social media, as well as appearing on shows and podcasts like yours.
Amen. As you were talking about that, I was thinking, I just seen this, I can't remember, 4 or 5 days ago. There was a person working at a convenience store The guy walked in and put a hatchet down, you know, was holding onto a hatchet, threatening, you know, the guy, give me the money and stuff. Well, this guy just happened to have his concealed weapon on him, and he didn't point it at the guy, you know, drop it and all that, you know, like a cop would do anything. He just pulled out the gun and said, I don't think so, you know. And the guy laid his hatchet down and walked out, you know, ran out. As you said, you know, they flee. And the clerk got fired by his boss because the boss didn't like the gun in the store, you know. He didn't threaten the guy with it. He didn't, you know, chase him down the street carrying, you know, brandishing a weapon. All he did was, in order to protect himself, he just unholstered it and brought it out in front of him and said, I don't think it's going to happen today. And the clerk ended up getting fired for that because, you know, the society doesn't like guns. They'd rather have you wrestle a guy with a hatchet and then chase him away. Rush Limbaugh calls these people low information voters, you know, and I agree with that statement. I believe it goes way back to, you know, the way they have basically cut the way history and government's taught in public schools today. I mean, if people do not go over the history of America, they don't go over our form of government, they don't go over the intent of the founding fathers of this nation, if they don't provide the information a person should possess in order to be a good, responsible, productive citizen anymore, then the low information voters will only vote the way they're told to vote, and that they're being told that by the politicians. Do you see this as the way the leftists are able to gain so much traction in trying to revoke the Second Amendment, because they're removing all of these things from school?
Well, there's no doubt they try to do that. You know, our academic institutions in our country try to ignore Second Amendment rights, either if it's law schools, you know, at the high level, or down in the local school systems. We've even seen textbooks where the Second Amendment, you know, talks about how it doesn't apply to individual rights; it only applies to the military. We've had to get textbooks removed from classes because they keep trying to put that kind of stuff, indoctrination, in on the kids. I mean, yeah, we see this all the time. You know, it's they like to try and rewrite history. If they could, they rewrite the Second Amendment out of the Constitution.
Yeah, I have no doubt on that. That's true. What are some of the other more recent newsworthy events going on right now that concern our Second Amendment rights that you've been dealing with? You know, like either banning guns outright or restricting gun rights?
Well, one of the things that we're really involved in is legal cases. We do about 80% of the Second Amendment case law that's been won in the courts protecting, you know, gun rights has been won by the Second Amendment Foundation and our attorneys. And we're currently working on three cases that are of significance. One in New York City, they have a law that if you have to have a permit to have a gun in your own home, which, by the way, costs a lot of money and takes like 9 months.
Wow.
But if you have a gun in your own home, you're not allowed to move the gun out of your home except, you know, unloaded in a lockbox and only to 7 approved gun ranges in the city of New York.
Wow.
So if you want to move your gun, say, if you want to take your gun to shoot at a range out on Long Island, you can't do it. If you wanted to go upstate New York and participate in a shooting match, you can't do it. If you have a second home in Florida or another home in New York City, you can't move it from one home to the other home. That case right now is before the United States Supreme Court. We've got a very important amicus brief filed in that case. And we're hoping the court rules our way, and I believe they will, that law is unconstitutional. And your Second Amendment rights don't stop at your front door. We have two other cases for cert petitions that we're hoping the Supreme Court grants to hear that are before them right now. One is out of California. The case is known as Pena. In California, they have two things. They have a so-called handgun roster and a micro-stamping requirement that the gun has to have the micro-stamping capabilities so you know what a bullet was fired from what gun. That's unproven, unreliable, unworkable, and at this point, no manufacturer can meet the standards of California, which means no new handguns can be sold in the state of California.
Okay.
And on the handgun roster, if new guns, therefore, can't be put on the roster, and if a gun isn't on the roster, it can't be sold. But the big problem is that when manufacturers don't support older models, the older models now fall off the list. So every year in California, the number of handguns available for self-protection keeps decreasing. Mm-hmm. And that case is before the U.S. Supreme Court. And then there's another one out of Texas. The 1968 Gun Control Act says that you have to be a resident of the state you buy a handgun in. You can't buy a handgun out of state. And that may have been made sense way back when the law was passed. so they could do a background check or, you know, something of that nature to make sure that you're okay. But now it's the same national instant background check system that gets used nationwide. So there's no reason why, if you're, you know, out on a vacation or, you know, a hunting trip or whatever it might be, why you can't buy a handgun in a neighboring state. This case came up because in Washington, D.C., where we knocked out their ban on handguns in your own home, and then knocked out their law saying you couldn't carry a handgun for self-protection, there really is no stocking gun dealer where you can go in and take a look at handguns, you know, to be able to buy a handgun in Washington. There's one licensed dealer who works out of the police department, and you have to order your gun, have it shipped to him, and then go pick it up, and he charges an outrageous fee on top of it to be able to get it. So we had some residents from Washington, D.C., where it's legal to buy a gun out of state, by the way, to go to Texas, where it's legal to sell a gun to somebody from out of state, but the federal government says you can't do it. Try to buy a gun, and of course they were denied. And that case has now worked its all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. So we're hoping we knock out that law as well.
Wow. Can you tell us what some of the recent victories your organization has seen and been part of concerning the preservation of our constitutional rights, specifically the Second Amendment?
Well, of course, the two U.S. Supreme Court cases that involved gun rights so far, the Heller case and the McDonald case, our attorney filed the Heller case, and we filed an important amicus brief in that case. The McDonald case was ours to start with. They both knocked out the ban on handgun ownership or functional firearm ownership in both the nation's capital and in the city of Chicago. And in the city of Chicago, in that case, then they incorporated the Second Amendment through the 14th Amendment to make it applicable to all 50 states and all our cities across the country. So as a result, that opened up the door for a lot of other litigation. That meant we also filed a suit that we won in North Carolina. They had a law saying emergency powers, like a snowstorm or hurricane, they could suspend Second Amendment rights. We knocked that out. We knocked that out in court as well. We also knocked out the ban on carry in the state of Illinois, that it was unconstitutional not to allow people to carry a firearm for self-protection. We knocked out a ban on, in the city of Chicago, a ban on gun stores and gun ranges. They said, okay, now we have to say you can own a gun, but we're not going to let you buy one or train with it. We knocked that out in federal court as well. We've knocked out a lot of laws across the country that had dealing with if you do daycare in your own home, you can't own a gun, or you can't be a foster parent if you own a firearm, or if you're a legal resident alien living here in the country, that you can't either own a gun or in some states you couldn't get a permit to carry it. We've knocked out those laws as well. We knocked out a ban on guns that they had in the Mariana Islands, which is a U.S. territory. We've had a significant number of case law victories all across the country.
Wow. You guys have been busy.
Golly. Yeah, the other side keeps us busy. And we won the McDonald case, which then allowed us to challenge other gun laws across the country. The anti-gunners, the prohibitionists in the country said that if the court ruled our way, it would open the floodgates litigation in the country. And in that case, they were right. Right now, we have 29 cases in federal court or across the country going on at one time.
Wow.
To help extend and protect Second Amendment rights.
What dangers do you see coming on the horizon concerning gun rights and the Second Amendment?
Well, let me say on the federal level, the biggest danger, of course, is what's going to happen after the 2020 elections. Mm-hmm. Right now we have a United States Senate that supports gun rights and a House of Representatives that doesn't and a president that does. It's very important for us to make sure that the other side doesn't get control of federal legislative apparatus. In states right now, there's only a handful of states we really have problems in. You know, California, Oregon, Washington, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, New Jersey, your state of Maryland. Mm-hmm. There's only a handful of states that really, the other side has control of. But again, elections have consequences. And so the biggest thing we have to challenge for us is to make sure the gun owners are educated, informed, and turn out to vote in the 2020 elections.
Yeah, amen. Alan, it's been great talking with you today. You know, I'm a staunch believer in the people's right to limit big government, and I appreciate your organization's efforts to preserve our constitutional rights as well, man. I do appreciate it.
Well, you can find out more about what we do at our website at saf.org, samalphafrank.org, or just put Second Amendment Foundation in any browser and we'll pop up.
Amen. And if someone wanted to get in touch with you to ask a question, join your group, and help in your efforts to preserve our right, that's how they can do it.
Yes,
through your website.
Okay. SAF.org. They can contact us through there and check us out on Facebook as well.
All right. I'll be putting links to all that in the show notes down below. Alan, thank you again for taking the time out of your busy schedule to visit with us today. I truly do appreciate it. And folks, there you have it. As Jack Webb used to say in the TV show Dragnet, just the facts. Facts, something politicians do not want to hear today. Facts, you know, things politicians can't argue against. I mean, they can argue against theory, and they can skew statistics to read the way they want them to read, but they cannot argue against someone who uses facts to back up their arguments. That is what politicians fear more than anything else in their quest to grab more and more power from the people of this nation, the facts. So go to the Second Amendment Foundation website, look around, and join the fight. Alan needs your support. He needs you as a member because there's power in numbers in this fight. And if you enjoy your freedom, you enjoy being able to sound off and using your First Amendment right of free speech, you can only do so by keeping your Second Amendment right of allowing the people of this land to keep and bear arms. And if you don't believe me, as Alan said, look down at Venezuela. Look at various nations that took weapons out of the hands of the people. Soon, the freedom to speak contrary to the government policy was shut down. The freedom to assemble was shut down. Any form of dissent was shut down. And it all started with taking the ability of the people to resist their government, taking away their rights, taking weapons out of the hand of the people. That is the only thing standing between the U.S. today and following the pattern of other nations in history. So I urge you to go to saf.org and join the fight today. Your grandchildren are counting on you, so don't let them down. Alan, again, thank you for taking the time out of your schedule. I enjoyed it, man.
Me too. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right, that's all the time we have for today, folks. For Alan Gottlieb and myself, this is Pastor Bob reminding you, be blessed in all that you do.
Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this. Your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing Faithcasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts. Share your unique insights and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with Faithcasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the Faithcasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. Faithcasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a faithcaster. Faithcasters, your voice, your platform, your success.